Erika Rowell has worked in the movie industry and as a journalist. She's the author of The Brothers Grimm, the films of Ethan and Joel Coen. In the book, Rowell describes the Coens as prankster mythmakers. She told Steve Paulson about her fascination with the Coen brothers' movies.
I believe the fascination started with their use of narrative. Originally, I thought, well, I'll watch a Coen brothers movie and things look so familiar and yet so different. And I wanted to see how what they were doing to make seeming opposites coexist in their stories, in their movies. And so I started from that perspective, and I was just drawn, you know, the more you look at a Coen brothers movie, the more you find in it. I also liked their playful and, yes, as I say in my book, even trickster mentality that they bring to their storytelling.
Well, in the introduction to your book, you compare Ethan and Joel Coen to the West African trickster god Eshu. What's the connection there?
Right. I think I bring in the story where Eshu wears a multicolored hat or a bicolored hat, and so that one person sees one color, I think it's red, and another villager sees the other color, and they get into an argument because they've both seen this person walking through, this Eshu character, but each is certain of what he's seen. I think that's what the Coen brothers do. They give us a world where conflicting actualities can coexist. In that way, they bring the viewer in into the job of interpreting, you know, what they're seeing, making sense of a world that strange dualities or even multiplicities are existing, often at odds with each other.
So are they always playing with point of view? I mean, sometimes we're seeing this through the eyes of one particular character, but maybe we can't really trust what that character is thinking?
I think we see a lot of points of view, certainly in Barton Fink. They play with objective and subjective points of view and kind of blend the two, even in the way the camera is telling the story, so that Barton sometimes walks into his own point of view shot. Not quite muddling them, but certainly playing a little bit with the grammar rules of film.
Now, you mentioned one of the Coen brothers' earliest films, Barton Fink, which was made back in 1991, the story of a New York playwright who goes to Hollywood in the 1940s, where he experiences a terrible writer's block, among other things. And this really plays with the sense of what's real and what isn't, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's this movie that it's very surreal. I think they're drawing a lot on what the surrealist artists, you know, helped create in terms of that art. It's very difficult in that movie, and you could say in a number of Coen brothers movies, it's difficult to see where the reality of the movie, the reality of the fiction begins, and then sort of a strange other world, like a dream world, say, as is the case in Barton Fink. In narratives, we're used to seeing much clearer markers of these different layers of a narrative. They tend to blend one into the other. So as I say in the book, when we watch Barton Fink, our viewing experience becomes a little bit like Barton's own experience, where he can't quite make sense of the world that he's seeing. It's a very strange world, you know, so much so that by the apocalyptic end, he walks into a burning hotel. The next-door neighbor, who seemed to be throughout just a regular old Joe, a common man, has turned out to be this madman munt, this killer. And he just walks in without a second thought into a burning room, as if he's just going back into his hotel room where he happens to live. So these layers of reality are very difficult to discern what exactly is going on. And that certainly is the realm of trickster.
There are all these jokes as part of the movie. For instance, Barton Fink is plagued by a mosquito, but then at one point a character tells him that, you know, Los Angeles was really too dry for mosquitoes in the 1940s.
What the hell happened to your face?
Nothing, it's just a mosquito bite.
Yeah, like hell it is. There are no mosquitoes in Los Angeles. Mosquitoes breed in swamps. This is a desert.
So, you know, is this real or not?
Well, exactly, and I think the Coen brothers do this in several of their movies, playing with the idea of knowledge and belief. It really looks like something's biting his face. We've kind of been with him there at night when he's woken up by the hum of a mosquito. I point out in my book that the screenplay can somewhat do this a little more clearly, which is kind of cheating when you're watching a movie, I suppose, if you talk about the screenplay. They say a hum, perhaps a mosquito, is heard. And so right there in the prose, as they put this on camera, we get the idea of it's something very familiar. Maybe we're 90% we know what it is because we recognize that hum. And then we have this fact coming up later on. Well, right, it was a desert. How can there be mosquitoes in the desert?
So it's possible that Barton Fink is crazy.
It's possible that he's crazy. It's possible that he's dreaming. What I argue is that we're seeing a lot of what we see in California is sort of an outpouring of the contents of his head. So we are actually in the writer's head, and it's very unclear, I think, to most viewers exactly, you know, when reality stops and when we start to just see the inner workings of his mind. You know, the life of the mind, that's another kind of in-joke. Not an in-joke, but it's a joke, right? I'll show you the life of the mind, says Charlie Meadows. Well, that's what the movie's been showing us. They're showing us the life of Barton Fink's mind. And if we take everything at face value and try to make sense of this strange world that doesn't really quite exist within the same, you know, physics and parameters as the world that we, the viewers, walk around in, well, then we start to see that, in fact, maybe he doesn't have writer's block. Maybe all of this stuff is churning in his mind, and we're seeing the creative process at work. Hmm. That's basically my main interpretation, I suppose.
I gotta tell you, the life of the mind, there's no roadmap for that territory. And exploring it can be painful. The kind of pain most people don't know anything about.
You mentioned that the Coen brothers often play with our preconceptions about knowledge and belief, and certainly that comes into their later movie, Oh Brother, We're Out There, their big hit from 2000. Can you give us a brief summary of that movie?
Sure. Well, in that movie, which opens with a nod to Homer and Homer's Odyssey, we find a group of escaped Coens, Everett Ulysses McGill being the main partner in crime of the three convicts.
He's the guy played by George Clooney.
Exactly. So he and two of his fellow chain gang convicts at the very beginning escape. And purportedly they escape because one of them has stolen a lot of money, and that money is buried somewhere. And that somewhere where it's buried, the valley that it's buried in, which is close to where Everett is from, is going to be flooded. It's going to be flooded because they're going to light up the South. They're going to bring electricity to that little part of Mississippi. And they have all these adventures along the way, not unlike the more famed traveler, Ulysses, a.k.a. Odysseus.
Mm-hmm. And there are all these allusions to Homer's Odysseus. Obviously, starting with the name of the George Clooney character, Ulysses.
Right.
And he sort of has this circuitous way of getting back to his wife, who's being courted by a suitor and has to win her back through trickery, in a way. They must have had fun sort of going back and, you know, trying to create a cinematic version of this ancient epic.
Oh, they must have had a blast. I think it's using the Homeric story, which celebrated the Ulysses character, the Odysseus character. And when the Coen brothers take it, they make the Everett character, who's very much a trickster character. He's a liar. He's a thief. He brings about radical change. He takes us from one world of corruption, political corruption, and strangely, through his song, through almost not happenstance, but through a bizarre series of events, he affects this social change and brings a better world order. Even after it's sort of a water apocalypse, when the flood actually comes into the valley and kind of saves them through this strange kind of water rebirth, you know, in the end, the poser who's been trying to become elected doesn't get elected, and instead, the Charles Durning character does get elected. He's the incumbent, but he brings into his fold now the three Coens that we've been following throughout.
So the Coens become the truth tellers in a way.
Absolutely, yes. The liars become the truth tellers. They lie to get us to a higher truth.
Well, and to some degree, this is the dichotomy that comes up in a lot of the Coen brothers' movies. On the one hand, they are full of playfulness, sort of this trickster element we've been talking about, and yet some of them deal with very serious issues. Oh Brother, racism and injustice in the South.
Absolutely. I mean, I was blown away by the boldness of this movie in that they're taking on such, and this was before Barack Obama was elected president, they're always sort of ahead of these main cultural streams. And the fact that they talked about something we don't often talk about, you know, in our general everyday lives, you know, like the history of racism. I mean, the Ku Klux Klan scene is a haunting scene.
Erica Rowell is the author of The Brothers Grimm, the films of Ethan and Joel Coen. She spoke with Steve Paulson.